going to take a piece of this text from Luke, and we're going to study through it, occasionally comparing it. We're going to have to bring in Matthew too, because I think this is, you know, they are meant to be studied together. We're going to bring in Matthew's text as well. And so we'll start in verse 31 here. Luke 6, verse 31, where the Master says, "Do to others as you would have them do to you." Here's how New American Standard puts it. It says, "Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Pardon, and you will be pardoned. Give, and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return." This passage that begins with the Master saying, treat others the same way you want them to treat you. This saying is sometimes is referred to, sometimes called the golden rule. Have you ever heard that? The golden rule. The golden rule. Do unto others as you have them do unto you. This is a teaching of the Master that derives directly from the Torah, actually. But I notice that people seldom put the thing together. In the Torah, the commandment that the Master quotes, and he told us is the second greatest commandment of the Torah, is you shall love your neighbor as yourself. When coupled with the mitzvah to love God, these are the two commandments, the two great pillars of Torah on which the whole Bible hangs. That's what he said. In Matthew 22:40, he says, all the law and the prophets hang here. In the book of Romans, Paul says in Romans 13, he says, whatever other mitzvah, whatever other commandment there may be, it can be summed up in this one rule. Love your neighbor as yourself. In the book of Galatians, Paul says, the entire Torah is summed up in a single command. Love your neighbor as yourself. James, the righteous, the brother of the Master, says in James 2:8, if you really keep the royal law found in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing right. He calls it the royal law of the Torah. So the apostles are in unanimous consent with the Master. But what does it really mean to love your neighbor as yourself? How do we love our neighbors in practical terms? And of course, this brings in it brings to mind the Talmudic story of Hillel and the would-be proselyte who stood on one foot that we read about in Shabbat 31a, and Shammai beat him with a stick, and Hillel said to him, You want to know the Torah in a nutshell, I'll tell you the Torah. What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor, he said. That's the whole Torah. The rest is commentary. Rabbi Hillel understood that the entire Torah can be summarized in the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. It's the same thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do not do to others what you would find hateful. Love your neighbor as yourself. These are different ways of saying the same thing. But he also understood that such a broad and idealistic ethical charge as love your neighbor as yourself can sometimes lack practical application. Love your neighbor as yourself. Okay? Well, what does that mean? So rather than tell the man this sort of broad, ideal, abstract, love your neighbor as yourself, he puts it in practical terms. He says, here's what it means. If you don't like something being done to you, don't do that thing to somebody else. That's a little easier to understand. I don't like anybody poking me in the eye. I just find it very painful and unpleasant when somebody comes up and pokes me in the eye. I don't like that, so I'm not going to poke someone else in the eye because I wouldn't like it. The Master comes a generation after Hillel and he builds on this same teaching, upon the teaching of Rabbi Hillel. He relates essentially the same teaching as Rabbi Hillel, but instead of putting it in terms of don't do to somebody what you wouldn't want them to do to you, he turns it around, he inverts it by saying do to others as you would have them do to you. This is the practical application of the mitzvah of loving one's neighbor as oneself. So in Hillel's version, do not do to others as you would want them to do to you. In Hillel's version, this allows for a kind of love that's also could be an apathy. Just like, I don't mess with you, you don't mess with me, we love each other. And that's how we love each other. The master turns us around. And he turns us around and he says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And this is the practical mitzvah. This is the practical application of the mitzvah that we find in the Torah that says, love your neighbor as yourself. And for the next several verses here in Luke, the master goes on to expound upon this teaching with some further insights and some practical applications. Okay. He says, I'm toggling here between New International and New American Standard. I like the way that it's expressed in both, you know, its strengths and weaknesses in different translations. But he says here in verse 32, he says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. These sayings are directly parallel to the Sermon on the Mount, where we read in Matthew 5:44 through 47, he says, I tell you, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? If you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the Gentiles do that? Yeshua teaches then that love is a matter of treating others impartially. Showing kindness, what does that mean, treating others impartially? It means showing kindness to those that we would be inclined not to show kindness to. So in other words, it's no great mitzvah for a man to greet his own brother. Hey, how you doing? Or to show kindness to his close friend. That's no big deal. But to greet a stranger? To show kindness to an enemy? To an enemy? That's exceptional. That is exceptional. That kind of behavior is completely abnormal for human beings. But for disciples of Yeshua, it is supposed to be completely normal. We are supposed to be a completely different kind of people. Yeshua tells us that when we show this type of kindness to others, this type of impartiality, bestowing goodness upon those we love and those we do not love, when we do that, we are emulating God. We are sons of our Father in heaven, that we are in the example of God. And he gives this as example. He says, anyone would lend to someone else as long as they're expected to get their money back. I mean, anybody would do that. And if you lend money to those whom you expect repayment from, how is that any big mitzvah for you? So you lent them some money, you expect to get it back. Big deal. Even sinners lend to sinners. This isn't just speaking about money, though. It's speaking about the way we treat people. He's speaking about how we treat people. Because money here is being used as an example of chesed, as an example of kindness to people. When we show kindness to people, when we show some kindness, some goodness to decent people, we expect them to show kindness in return. Right? I mean, if you treat someone with respect, you treat someone, you're always like, respect, but you expect some respect in return. And we are hurt. It's very hurtful. And we're angry when the kindness and the goodness and the respect that we have shown to somebody else is not returned to us. That's very, very irritating. And when that happens, we will pull away from that person. That's when you're like, you know, not going to have anything to do with. I mean, as an example, imagine that you take notice, suppose there's a family that's in financial need or something like that, and you think of the passage in 1 John where it says, whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in such a person? So you think of this, and therefore, out of a spirit of generosity and true charity, you decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the grocery store, I'm going to buy them groceries. I'm going to buy them a week's worth of groceries, and then you drop by their home, and you're like, just these are groceries, just, you know, I want you to have these. But instead of gratitude, they're like, oh, just put them over there on the counter. And then even have the audacity to complain that they don't care for the vegetables. And next time, could you please include more breakfast cereals? And not so much as a thank you. And if that happened, you know, you'd be like, you're feeling a little put out. I mean, who wouldn't? It's just, well, how do you like that? But the Master tells us, we're to give to others without expecting, without anticipating repayment. And even gratitude, even the simple decency of a thank you, is a form of repayment. Yeshua says, love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, because God is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. So who are the people he's telling us to show this kindness and love to? The ungrateful and the wicked. To be this kind of person who truly gives simply for the sake of giving. One who shows kindness to those who are unkind. One who shows goodness to those who are not good. One who shows love even to an enemy. This is the high calling of discipleship to Yeshua. This is the high path of the Master. This is a different kind of halakha. It is the heart of His approach to Torah. And so we often glibly, we cite the Master's principle, you know, do unto others as you have them do unto us, and the Torah's mitzvah of love your neighbor as yourself. And we say this in the Shema. But how often do we ever really struggle with the implications of the words that are coming off our lips when we cite these things? How often do we really struggle with the implications of Yeshua's words here? This is serious business. This is difficult. Difficult, very difficult. As I observe others and as I observe myself, I'm convinced that we as believers have hardly even made a small effort to fulfill the Master's charge in this regard. We greet those who greet us. We show kindness to our brothers. We lend to those we expect to repay us. And we show kindness to those who return kindness. But when do we love the unlovable? Think of how many times, brothers and sisters, believers, fellow believers, bristle at one another and turn bitter rancor toward one another, showing open hostility for one another because they disagree over the Scriptures, or because they've taken some insult, or they picked up some offense. Think of how often when something goes wrong, we instantly, when somebody does wrong to us, instantly we want to see that wrong avenged. We long for vengeance, even if it's only, you know, that person needs to apologize. You know, he just needs to apologize to me. You know, what is that? That's vengeance. I want to see them grovel. I want them down on the ground. That's a very it's an evil part of my heart. Just to make them apologize. Or possibly worse, to return the wrong. Perhaps reporting, you know, a good way to do this? An easy way to do this. I'll just report it to someone else. You know what he did to me? You know what he said? Can you believe this? Can you? I'll just tell you. Let me just tell you. Calling that person to account, because I'm going to call that person to account. I'm going to tell somebody else what that person did. I'm going to make them pay. Yeshua teaches us, be merciful just as your Father is merciful. This is the high calling of the Master. I'm telling you, this is a problem for us. This is a big problem. This is what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. We're always merciful with ourselves. We are. You don't think you are? You are. We're quick to forgive. We're quick to forget. We excuse our own bad behavior and we move on. We just get over it. You know, it's like, dang, why did I do that? Oh, well, on with life. Yeshua teaches us to show that same kind of mercy that we're accustomed to showing to ourselves, to show that same kind of mercy to others. This is what it means to love others, to do to them as we would have them do to us. He says in this passage, he says, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. This is the principle of forgive us our debts. As we forgive our debtors, we pray it every day in the Lord's Prayer, in the Avinu, three times a day. The words are clear and certain. There's no misunderstanding here. We're not to judge others. We're not judges. We're not to condemn others, because we're not a court of law. We are not a Beit Din. Instead, we are to offer forgiveness. Now, I know these words are very hard words. These are the Master's words. They're not mine. I know that objections spring to mind. Like, what about this? What about that? You know, so are you saying this? Or are you saying that? And but these are the words of Yeshua. We can't just dismiss them. You can't think of an exception whereby you say, well, you know, that wouldn't work in such and such a situation, and therefore use that as your blank check to excuse yourself from keeping the words of the Master. One of the principles, I could come up with excuses all day for you. You know, I'll give you an excuse right now. Suppose, you know, matters of victimization. Suppose a woman is married to an abusive husband who beats her, God forbid. And so what does she do? She returns his hostility and his aggression with love, gentleness, forgiveness. Later on, he beats her again. She forgives. He beats her again. How long is this going to go on? I mean, even the earth cries out. This is unjust. How long shall this go on? It's a sacrilege. It's an injustice. So let's be clear about this. Love cannot be a license for victimization. We're responsible to love others. To love and to forgive. But not to sit idly by while harm is being done to others. If we're to love others as we love ourselves, we must love ourselves a little bit too. Leviticus 19:16 says, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. In other words, we're not to stand idly by while harm is being perpetrated. And therefore, we have a responsibility while acting in love to protect others when it's in our power to protect them. And by the same token, to protect ourselves, so long as all of our conduct is dealt out in love. And this is the greatest difficulty. This is the one I have personally known and experienced. You know, that sometimes as a congregational leader, when it's been necessary to make decisions for the good of the many that on the surface do not feel particularly loving. So how do you keep these things in balance? With great patience, this is how you do it. With long suffering. With great patience, with long suffering, slow to anger. Going the extra mile. Going an extra 3 miles. An extra 4 miles. But at some point, and I don't know at what point that is, but at some point, you know what? God knows what point it is. But at some point, there is not another cheek to turn. And you cannot go another mile. And then, and only then, when you have exhausted every option in the arsenal of love, then you have to ask of love, how shall we proceed? And this is reality. Though from our perspective, God's mercy is endless and His love endures forever, there's also a limit because there is also wrath and there is also justice. I am not a pacifist. I do not have my head in the sand. I do not believe in, thank you, sir, hit me again. There is a limit. But that limit must be reached only through the avenue of love, through showing love and kindness, forgiveness, gentleness. Not in anger, not in harshness, not in bitterness or caustic ire. It will happen. It will happen in relationships that you reach the limit and you stand like Jacob in front of your brother Esau and you say, Esau, you go on to Seir. We'll meet up with you later. Don't wait for me. And Jacob went the other way. In other words, parting the ways. But here's the thing regarding Jacob and Esau. Their parting was in peace. And Jacob, in all humility, before their parting, had bowed down 7 times before Esau, saying, if your servant Jacob has found favor in your eyes. So even when there is conflict, that conflict must be governed by the rules of love. Pure and simple. Even when there is conflict, let the rules of the conflict be love. Paul says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Messiah also has forgiven you. Most often we do not respond with love, and we do not judge others with love or feel mercy in our hearts because the standard that we judge by is the log in our own eye. In our greatness, our own ego, our pride, it's an insult. It's an insult to the pride that's unforgivable, that's unsustainable, that's unredeemable. It's not the pain when you struck me on the cheek. That pain went away very quickly. But the blow to the ego, the how dare he? Who does he think he is? We can turn the other cheek, but we have no other ego to turn, do we? So until we can overcome this inner person, this ego, this sense of yesh, our sense of the big self, we are unable to love. Have you ever known a person who can, you know the saying, well, he can dish it out, but he sure can't take it. You have heard that saying? That's the saying. You can dish it out, but you sure can't. Or another one. People that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Meaning, if your ego is so fragile that you can't bear being slighted, what are you doing slighting others? Right? These sayings come from the book of 2 Proverbs. Right? Yes. Anyway, the behavior is worth considering. Who is this person who can dish it out but cannot take it? Who is this person? Why does this person dish it out in the first place? Because he sees himself above others. His ego is greater. So he dishes it out on those who are lower. And why can't this person take it? This disher outer, why can't he take it? Because those lower than him, he conceives of as having no right to dish upwards. The yesh, the big somebody, unconsciously thinks of himself as like a commanding officer among ranks of simple enlisted men. The bishop among the pawns. And therefore he rides above them. shouting orders down at them. But if one of those lower beings should have the impudence to retort or to insult the commander, God help us all. This is the misery of every human heart. That we think of ourselves in these grandiose terms, delusions of grandeur, unconscious. They're unconscious. It's not like you really think of yourself that way. Did you know I was talking about you? It's not as if you really think of yourself as, I'm the big yesh here and everybody else is below me. You don't think that out loud in your head. It's buried in your unconsciousness. And if this is the way we are, if this is the way our hearts are, how can we ever hope to love others? This is useless. This is hopeless. This week began the seven Sabbaths of consolation. We heard in the Haftarah portion today the ministry and message of Yochanan, John the Baptist, the voice of the gospel, the proclaimer of good news, the evangelist, the gospelator. In Isaiah 40, he said, in verse 3, it says, a voice is calling, clear the way for the Lord in the wilderness. Clear the way for the Lord in the wilderness. Make smooth in the desert a highway for our God. Let every valley be lifted up, and every mountain and hill be made low. And let the rough ground become a plain, and the rugged terrain a broad valley. The message of John the Baptist, as he came preparing the way, the highway for the Messiah. How did he do this? How did he prepare the way for Messiah? How is the way for Messiah prepared? The prophet Isaiah tells us, the low places are lifted up, the high places are lowered. I don't think this is literal. I don't think it's literal because John the Baptist was not actually doing road construction. He was building a highway through the hearts of men and women by calling them to repentance, preparing that highway of hearts for the feet of Messiah. And so this gives us a clue. This is how we are to prepare our hearts for Messiah, how we become a highway for His holy feet to tread upon. The high places, the haughty ego, the yesh, the pride and self-exaltation must be lowered. Likewise, the low places, self-effacement, the bittul, the one who says and knows, lo, I am but dust and ashes. This one will be exalted, lifted up. This is what Yeshua says over and over again. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled. Whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. In other words, whatever is lifted up will be lowered, and the low places will be lifted up. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord. He will lift you up. In his epistle to the Philippians, Paul exhorts us likewise. He says in the New International Version of Philippians 2, it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. That's a verse to live by. Roll that up. Bind it to your arm and between your eyes. In humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And in so doing, the high places will be made low and the low places lifted up, and the highway for Messiah will be made smooth. As believers, our first reflex should be to withhold judgment, to withhold condemnation. It should be reflexive to offer forgiveness. Instead, why are we like this? Why are we quick to judge? Quick to condemn? These are the things we're good at. We're quick at that. Quick. But we're slow to forgive. Reluctant to forgive. The Master says, give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. This is what he says. These are his words. When he says this, though, you know, he's quoting from the prophet Malachi, and he's borrowing from Malachi's words about paying tithes. That's how Malachi uses it. Malachi saying, hey, you pay the tithe, God'll enrich your storehouses. So we often hear this passage quoted in church about, you know what Yeshua says? He says, Jesus says, if you put money into the church, God will. But that's not what he's talking about here. The context is not paying tithes here. He's taken this completely out of context. Yeshua is not talking about giving money to ministries or paying tithes at all. He's talking about love. And as you can see, Yeshua's idea of love is not a nebulous, warm, mushy feeling. Love. Give love, and it will be given to you from God. A good measure. Pressed down, shaken together, running over, poured into your lap. Yeshua's idea of love is not a warm, mushy feeling. It's difficult stuff. It's painful stuff. It's very, very hard. Selflessly giving, showing impartiality, not expecting kindness in return, or even so much as a thank you very much. Not judging, not condemning, generously bestowing forgiveness. This is Yeshua's idea of love. He says that if we will give love, love will be given to us. God's love. A good measure. Pressed down. Shaken together. Running over. Poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. In the epistle of 1 John, it says, we love. We love. Why do we love? We love because He first loved us. If someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he's a liar. For the one who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also. In Matthew 7:12, Yeshua summarizes all of this, these teachings, with what James calls the royal law of love, what we call the golden rule. In everything, do to others what you would have them to do to you. This sums up the Torah and the prophets. Shabbat Shalom.
Our Father, which art in heaven.